welcome to episode 18 of Girls on Pop. I'm your co-host, Marina Antunes, joined today by a fellow co-host,
Ashley Lynch.
We're back talking about some stuff.
Talking about some movies.
That's right. We're going to talk about some movies in a bit, but I don't even really want to talk about this for too long, but I think it's worth mentioning that Amazon just dropped a gazillion dollars to buy 007. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's like the buried lead there is Amazon bought MGM Studios, which is not, honestly, not that huge of a surprise to me. Like, that sort of makes sense for them, as much as maybe I don't like the idea of, like, more things being consolidated under more single companies, and Amazon, which already has way too much power, is having even more power and, you know, reaching into all forms of media. It's like, I don't necessarily love that, but this sale does not really surprise me too much.
No, I can't say it surprises me either. The thing that I was more surprised at was the fact that it took them this long to get around to it, and that they beat out Netflix to the punch. Because, I mean, in addition to the 007 movies, there's that whole back catalog of MGM stuff. Yeah. That I think is what they will really want to add to their coffers of on-demand viewing, so...
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I mean, at this point, that's pretty much the only thing MGM has at this point, is they've got their, you know, however long, like 50 years of back catalog, however many titles, which stretches out a long ways, and is there's some really good titles in there. And then, of course, the James Bond franchise, which is the only thing that has kept MGM alive up to this point. And MGM, for as long as I've been alive, has been a studio that has always had one foot in the grave. It has always been in financial trouble, has always been on the verge of bankruptcy. And it's like the only thing that has kept them alive has been James Bond. And even they had to basically strike up a deal with Sony to partner with them on it to keep doing that. So they've never really been in good shape. One of the most interesting things, and I kind of wish this had actually gone forward, but many years ago, probably about, I don't know, 8 years ago at this point, I remember there was an offer put forth by the Scott brothers, Tony Scott and Ridley Scott, back when Tony Scott was still alive. We miss him. But the two brothers had put in an offer to basically put together enough funding to purchase the studio, and then they would run it. And I really like that idea. I wanted to see what a movie studio run by two filmmakers would look like. And I think it would be a lot very similar to United Artists, which is now part of MGM. But that was the United Artists' original intent when Charlie Chaplin started that studio, is that it was supposed to be an artist-run studio. It was supposed to, you know, be films from filmmakers, and they were going to be sort of controlling the output that way. And unfortunately, it just financially hasn't panned out and didn't go that way. And now it's in the hands of the Bezos.
Yeah. What I'm not quite sure, I mean, I don't think it makes any difference for the release of the upcoming 007 movie, though. Do you think?
No, probably not. It's gonna post-date that. I mean, you know, who knows? Like, The movie No Time to Die, apparently it's had a lot of time to die because it's been postponed for over a year. It's like, well, some time to die later, eventually, pending death. it's just a very comedic title to me. I kind of love it for that fact. But James Bond was one of the first movies to actually come out of the gate and say, hey, we're pushing this movie a year. And I remember at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, and I remember at that time going, whoa, is this like an actual thing, or is this like our film is not ready and we're looking for any excuse? But no, it was a real thing, and they were kind of ahead of the curve on that. Everyone else ended up pushing too, so good on them.
So that's the Amazon news. Let's talk about some trailers, because that was really the only thing. It's like, hey, you should take note if you haven't seen the news. So, let's talk about some trailers. And okay, this is kind of a fun transition. Let's talk about The Eternals.
Yes.
No Time to Die? Okay, we're never going to die. Let's talk about The Eternals. I legit know nothing about The Eternals. Same. I did think for like a minute after I watched the trailer, I'm like, maybe I should look it up on Wikipedia. And I even searched it up and I looked at it, and then I looked at how many volumes there were, and I'm like, there actually isn't that much content. I might actually be able to read all of this, but do I want to? No, not really. Just let me watch the movie.
You know, I'm the same way. I know absolutely nothing about the Eternals. Even when I was reading comics, I was never really enamored with the whole cosmic side of Marvel. It just didn't appeal to me. So I didn't read those titles. I didn't read Silver Surfer. I didn't read Guardians of the Galaxy. I didn't read, like, all that stuff. If Galactus showed up in the comic, I was like, eh. You know, it's like, I don't want to read that stuff. So I always actively just ignored that stuff because it didn't appeal to me. So I know absolutely nothing about Eternals. I know nothing about the comics. I know nothing about the film other than who's involved. I know it's a Marvel property. I know it's Chloe Zhao. I know that it's Kumail Nanjiani Thirst Trap. And at that point, that's all I know at this point. And then after this teaser, now granted, it's just a teaser, I still don't know anything about what this film is.
Right.
It's like, okay, there's a bunch of galactic characters who just apparently have existed throughout all time and possibly, like, didn't necessarily create humanity, but is entirely responsible for humanity's, like, technological advances through the years, which maybe... oops on their part. I don't know. Depends on how you look at the state of humanity right now. But that's it. I genuinely don't know what this film is. I don't know what it's about. And that actually excites me. I'm excited to go into a Marvel movie where I have no idea what it is.
Right? Yeah, no, I kind of feel the same. And that's why when I was looking, I'm like, I don't really want to know anything. I was a bit disappointed by the trailer and that I expected a little bit more at this point. I mean, mind you, it's still like months away. But
yeah.
Right now I was like, do we even have a bad guy? Do we even know who the villain is? Is there a villain? What exactly is going on here? I have no idea, but it still looks amazing.
Yeah, like I said, it's a teaser. It's not a full trailer. We're going to get, like, at least 2, maybe 3 more trailers before this thing comes out. We'll get a lot more hints at what the story is, what the stakes are, who the villain is, et cetera, and where this thing is going. So there's definitely going to be more to come. And so right now, it's just like, this is what it looks like, more or less.
It looks very pretty.
It looks like a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it looks very pretty.
Yeah, it does.
Very pretty with pretty people.
I'm interested, I'm intrigued, and I'm entirely bewildered, and I'm happy to stay that way.
I'm with you there. And that's coming, actually, it's not that far away, November.
Oh, wow.
I know.
So we're getting, do you know when Black Widow's coming out? That's still coming out in June or July, right?
I think it's still coming out in July. I'm just going to look up the release date.
So we're going to get Black Widow, and then we're going to get Eternals.
Yeah, July.
And that's it for this year, right?
I don't know.
We're getting Loki, but, you know, I mean, in terms of
the movies, I think. Movies. Yeah, I think that's it. So, yeah, Black Widow is July 9th.
Okay.
So, yeah, that might be it for the Marvel calendar of releases until 2022, when everything will come out.
Which is more than last year.
Exactly, right? Tomorrow War, talking about Amazon, this is all connected.
Oh, yes.
I don't know. So this comes from Chris McKay, who I had to look up because the name sounded familiar. I'm like, oh yeah, he's the Lego Batman movie guy.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's doing live action with Chris Pratt. Feels a little bit Day After Tomorrow, but whatever. I don't know. There's a lot going on here.
I mean, like, well, the most interesting thing at this point is this is one of those movies that is, you know, it's the pandemic collateral movie, in a sense, in the same way that Mitchell's versus Machines was, where this was a movie that was supposed to come out theatrically, and because of the state of movie theaters right now, they decided to bite the bullet. And not even, I'm not even sure who originally was going to release this movie, but instead of like sending it to whatever streaming service that they own, like in the way that HBO Max is doing with all theirs and Paramount is trying to do, they decide to just offload the entire film to Amazon. They just outright sold it to Amazon. And so Amazon is releasing it as a streaming movie. So this originally was supposed to be a theatrical film, but now it's coming out as a streaming movie, which, you know, it's kind of, I guess, disappointing for it. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know how enthused I am for this film. I mean, it looks fine. It looks like it's going to be okay. This is the problem with time travel. As soon as you do time travel, it opens you up to asking all sorts of ludicrous logistic questions where everything folds in on itself.
Yep.
And the idea that they've come back in time to basically conscript a bunch of random people to go fight a war in the future that has already been lost. It's like, okay, I kind of get the premise, but it all immediately starts me asking questions like, well, since Chris Pratt is apparently some super soldier, why don't you just like target like the 10 best like elite soldiers on the planet and then go back and conscript them and then go back 1 minute past that and conscript them again and 1 minute past that and script them again. And then you have like 10,000 Chris Pratts fighting your tomorrow war. You know, why don't you just do that? Or if it's like a future war that you clearly lost and it's not like a time ripples forward sort of thing, so you can't like go back in time and just prevent the aliens from having come to Earth in the first place, then why don't you use the time travel to just like escape to a time where everything isn't doomed and just go, we're freaking refugees from the future and we're surviving. You know, it just seems to me like there's so many, it opens up so many questions that are not answered in this trailer.
No.
Which are making me question the validity of the very premise of the film. And I think that's kind of a problem.
I think it's a huge problem that you nailed it exactly. Like when I looked at this, I waited a couple of days to watch the trailer, mostly because I was very lukewarm about the premise anyways. Especially when you lay it all out and you're like, what are you doing? And then you watch the trailer and you're like, I have to squint. Like some time travel movies, you really have to think about it for the time travel thing to fall apart. But this one, like, you barely have to squint and the whole thing just, like, collapses in on itself. I'm like, really? You weren't even gonna take the super soldier? You were gonna take his freaking wife? But you can't, you're not the hero because he volunteered? Like, where does this make sense?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I do like that. I really like Betty Gilpin and I don't think she does enough movies. So I'm always happy to see her, but I'm really like, yeah, I don't know about this.
Yeah, it looks like it might be fun. It's like a, you know, lazy Sunday afternoon, watch a silly turn off your brain and, you know, shooting aliens movie. So it might be good for that, but yeah. I'm not going to be carving out a hole in my schedule to see this one probably.
Not me either. I will watch it, but I'm not making special time for it.
Yeah.
I'm also not sure I'm going to make special time for this. And honestly, I'm not even sure why I suggested that we talk about this trailer. Other than it surprised me that they're still giving M. Night Shyamalan money to make movies. Like the TV show on Apple is okay, fine. Season one was great. Season two, not so good. The movies have been more missed than hit over the years, and he's still at it. And this premise, I just don't know. So the movie's just called Old. Seriously?
So I want to rewind a little bit because I find this fascinating. Because for the past few years, we have been in, and I'm going to try to roll this off the tongue properly, what you could only call the Shalamas on a sense, where it's basically a complete resurgence of Shyamalan's career, which is kind of amazing because this guy came out as a kid. I think he was just like 20 years old or something when he sold The Sixth Sense, a movie that got greenlit, and the exec who greenlit the film got fired for greenlighting it because they're like, what the hell are you doing greenlighting this film? It turns out to be this runaway smash blowaway hit that surprises everyone. It like dominated the cultural conversation for quite a while, and it's like, you know, still holds up as a legitimately good film. And all of a sudden he became this wunderkind director, appears on the front page of Newsweek as the next Spielberg, which that's a pretty grand prophecy for a 20-year-old kid to have lumped on his shoulders. And he starts making more movies. He makes Signs, and it's pretty well-received. And he makes The Village, and it's less well-received. And he makes A Lady in the Water, and people are like, oh, what is this crap? And it's like the culture, as much as they embrace him, they very quickly turned on Shyamalan. It's like he became known as a gimmick director. It's like, here's a cool premise and a twist ending, and there's really nothing more than that. And after that, the films start to get really hollow. And I remember sitting in a theater when it was not even a film he directed, it was a film he produced, but it was a movie called Devil, which was just like a contained thriller with three people in an elevator, and he produced it. And in the trailer, when it came up from a producer, M. Night Shyamalan, as soon as his name came up on screen, the audience burst into laughter. Oh. And I was like, oh shit, this dude's career is over. He's a joke now. He's done. No one is going to take anything he says seriously. And then we get The Last Airbender debacle, which is considered one of the worst movies of all time. And the dude just kind of, he flamed out and he went away. And then he came back, and I think, I'm trying to remember which film it was. I think it was The Visit that he did for Blumhouse.
Yeah.
And it was a small movie, very low budget, well put together for what it was. And he financed the thing almost entirely himself. He basically put up his house as collateral for the film. He bankrolled a, you know, bet on himself that he to buy his way back in, and it was successful. And he started making more movies, and he made Split, and he made Glass, and he's made a couple Apple TV series, and he's actually been fairly successful with this new strategy of, I'm only going to spend so much money and, you know, make an interesting little horror film. And he's successfully done it. He's brought his career back from the brink. And it's actually kind of interesting to see. I'm almost rooting for him at this point, even if I agree with you, where I think he's had more misses than hits. But this one, Old, I have to say, I'm actually really intrigued. I think it looks like a very interesting and unique horror film that I haven't really seen before. And it does a really good job of front-loading it with, like, here's a bunch of questions. What is the film? And what is actually going on in the film? And it's like, I'm intrigued. I'm going to watch it. I think it looks interesting and looks like it might be a fun time. It might fall apart if it doesn't stick to landing, but I think it shows a lot of promise. And I have to say, I'm in.
I'm always kind of curious because I really like single location movies. I think it opens up the door to do some really creative things for the filmmakers. So I'm really interested to see how Shyamalan manages to pull this off. And like you, I like things that have a lot of questions, and I like that he's putting all those questions up front, and you kind of like, are they actually gonna answer them all? And he does this is pretty common for a lot of the Shyamalan trailers and the shows. Like, a lot of the times they ask all the questions that you're thinking on purpose, and it generally tends to work. So I'm with you. I mean, on the one hand, I'm like, oh, why am I still watching this guy's stuff? And on the other hand, I'm like, because they managed to sell it on marketing most of the time. Yeah. And honestly, I'm also really curious to see Vicky Creeps. I haven't seen her in anything since Phantom Thread. I'm sure she's probably popped up in a couple of things here and there, but I haven't seen her in anything. So when I saw her, I'm like, okay, I like this cast. I'll watch Bernal and Krebs kind of like duke it out on the beach. Let's see where things go. Mm-hmm. So I'm certainly curious, like you. I'm interested.
It has that real kind of like Twilight Zone episode.
Very much.
Sort of feel to it, or like a chapter of like Creepshow or something like that, where it's like I could see it sort of fitting in an anthology like that. But in this point, it's just like the full standalone film.
Exactly.
So I'm digging what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah, and I kind of like the fact that it looks like this very unnatural locale, even though it's a beach. Like, everything about it just feels off for some reason.
I hate the title, though. That's a horrible title. It's way too on point saying, hey, here's what the mystery of the film is, where it's like, you know, I know this title has been used, but just The Beach would be a better title, you know? Like, there's much better titles that you could use for this film than this.
It feels a bit lazy.
Yeah.
But, and those trailers all came out within, like, a day of each other. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like, that's the overarching story to a certain degree. It's like, movies are back.
Right.
You know, it's, like this maybe would have fit in a bit with the Amazon sale story a bit, but it's like the movies are starting to do good business again. Kong versus Godzilla did good business. Everything that's come out since has done really well because theaters are starting to open up, at least in the U.S. and there's not a lot of competition out there either. So when a new movie comes out, it's kind of got a wide berth to make money. And same thing again with this week with Quiet Place Part 2, which apparently has done quite well. You know, so it's and AMC stock, basically, I know this only because I bought some AMC stock during the whole GameStop thing when it was really low. I was like, you know what? Theaters are going to open again. AMC's, I don't think they're going to fold. This is going to go back up. And so I picked up some stock and it shot up and it's worth like twice what I paid for it. So I got a nice little payout on that. So that was kind of nice. But, you know, that's the overarching story, is like, movies are back.
Yeah, just in time for the summer movie season. And actually, that's a good segue. You've already mentioned it, but let's talk about some of the stuff you've been watching. And one of the things that I did, I still haven't gone to the movies. And honestly, at this point, I think until... I'm only convinced I'm going to watch two movies in theaters this year. They're going to be Dune and Top Gun. Those are the only two that I really want to see on the giant IMAX big screen. So until then, I'm going to be very selective. But we did go to a movies in a way. We went to the drive-in yesterday. And I haven't been to the drive-in since we went to see Tenet there last year. That was the last time we went to the drive-in.
Exactly as Christopher Nolan intended it.
Exactly as he wanted me to see it in all its gloriousness pumping out of my car stereo. But yeah, we did go see A Quiet Place Part 2, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I don't know if I don't think I liked it quite as much as the first one, mostly because I with things like this, for me personally, it kind of starts to become diminishing returns when you're kind of just delving, like digging deeper and deeper into the same mythology without really offering much new. This time around, there's a lot more monsters, which I'm not sure is the best thing. I kind of like the fact that you don't really get to see them in the first movie. But it's one of the things that really stuck out to me is the sound design is spectacular. And the editing in this movie is pretty swell. I'd love to get your input as somebody that's like in the business. Once you see it, it'd be great to see what you think of the editing, because I was actually super impressed by how quickly the story moved. And some of the edits that they've made like in the service of telling the story, really impressive. Like, it really does do a lot with quite a little. So I was quite impressed by that overall. Technically speaking, it's a super well put together movie. And it was pretty damn entertaining too, to boot. So hey, that's my vote.
Very cool. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm probably going to have to wait till VOD to go see it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's like, I don't know that I necessarily wanted a sequel to A Quiet Place, or that necessarily needed it, because it felt like fairly self-contained and wrapped up. And like you say, it's like at the end of the first film, they kind of reveal everything about the monster, all the questions that you could have had. And so at that point, where's the mystery to this thing? And the mystery is where you're going to find the terror. So, you know, I'm curious to see what they do. At the same time, I've also been a little bit skeptical. But when I watched the first film, knowing the type of film that it was, I didn't get a chance to see it in theaters, which I think is probably the ideal place to watch a movie like that. Instead, I decided, knowing that it was a movie that was going to rely entirely on sound design and was a horror film, I decided to load up the film on my iPad and climb into bed at night in the dark and watch it with noise-canceling headphones on so that I could get like the full audio experience of the film. And I feel like, short of seeing it in the theater, that was maybe the ultimate way to see that movie. So I actually genuinely enjoyed the first one. I thought it was well done and interesting enough and unique and was a good ride.
Yeah, so no.
I'm looking forward to seeing if the second one can pull it off again.
Yeah, I don't think, like, for me, it's not quite as good as the first, but it's still pretty solid. They've left the door open for a third. It's starting to get a little thin there.
But starting to get a little whiskers on it.
A little. But so, yeah, that's my movie experience for the last, like, 3 weeks or whatever it is. The only other thing I saw was, movie-wise, I should say, is I saw MJ Bassett's new movie, Endangered Species, with Rebecca Romijn, about this family that goes to Kenya on a safari, and then shit happens.
And then shit happens.
Shit happens on a safari in Kenya. You can probably guess what kind of shit happens. Like, animals gone wild, rogue hunters. It's pretty crazy. But it's fun. It's like super low budget, really shoestring, kind of dirty and grungy, but it works and it's a bit of fun. I really liked it. I thought it was worth checking out. So that's on VOD for anybody that's curious.
If you liked Rogue, on my list, because just the premise I think sounds interesting.
Yeah, and she's been on a bit of a tear the last couple of years. So she did Rogue a couple of years ago with Megan Fox, which was about, like, I think it was a giant crocodile. And then now this one with, you know, animals in Kenya. And apparently she's working on one with underwater something or other. So it's been a fun turn for sure. Those are the only two movies I've seen in like 3 weeks.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's dive into like all the stuff I've seen, which is It's not everything, but I've got a few things here.
What do you got?
So the first one top of my list is I finally got around to seeing a movie from last year called Spontaneous.
Yes, I've seen this.
Yeah, this is from writer-director Brian Duffield, who wrote The Babysitter and Underwater. It's based on a novel. It's a very YA novel type of story. But it has quite a bit of bite to it. Like, the premise is basically kids in the senior class at this high school just start spontaneously exploding. One day, a girl in class, she just blows up. And by blow up, I mean paint sprays across the entire room.
It's pretty glorious.
It is. This film does not shy away from being gory.
No.
I mean, it always just amounts to, like, you know, copious amounts of blood spraying everywhere. You know, it's not like, oh, here's an arm or anything like that. But it's like, you know, kids are just blowing up at the school and no one knows what's going on. And the rest of the kids are basically just stuck in the situation where all the adults are trying to figure out what's going on, solve the problem, and don't even know how to diagnose it. And they're in this situation where it's like they could just randomly blow up any day and not know why, and there's no reason for it. And trying to piece together what that means now that they're suddenly facing, it's like, oh shit, I've got kind of a definite mortality. I could go at any moment. What does that mean? What did I want to do with my life? What's important to me? And they start making sometimes rash, sometimes bold decisions about who they are and what they want to do with their lives. And particularly the protagonist, played by Katherine Langford, incredibly well. She just shines in this movie. Basically goes through all the stages of grief, in a way, to come out the other end. And it's like the entire premise, if you had to boil it down for the film, it's like, one day you're going to explode, so fuck it, just live your life. That's basically what the story comes down to. And I actually found it incredibly affecting and incredibly powerful. I absolutely adored this film from beginning to end. And I've been recommending it to everyone. It is such a good movie.
It's funny because it came really highly recommended to me as well, which is why I watched it. And I did not have, Like, I love a good YA movie, and this one just, you know, didn't really work for me. I thought it was fine. Like, I enjoyed it while I watched it. I thought Katherine Langford is great because she tends to be pretty good even in really crappy material. But I liked it, but I'm like, I don't really understand the love for this thing. I don't really get it. So
I watched two very different movies.
I am so in the minority because, like I said, I only watched it because it came so highly recommended. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, that disappoints me. I want you to love it too, but whatever. We have differing opinions here.
That's right.
So the next thing I saw was the highly acclaimed movie, The Sound of Metal, from Darius Marder. It was a good movie. I don't know how to say other than that. Like, the premise of it basically being that Riz Ahmed plays a drummer in a metal band, and he just one day, his hearing just goes. He's now deaf. He can't hear anything. And his entire life changes as a result. He's a musician who cannot hear. And he embarks on a very kind of, I almost want to call it self-destructive journey, but it's like, you know, like you deal with all of a sudden losing one of your primary senses in the sense that is required of you to do what it is you feel like you were put on this earth to do. And that's now taken away from you. And your life is completely changed in a way that you don't want it to be changed. And he has to learn basically how to deal with that and goes on a very kind of like long journey of self-discovery to try to, you know, figure out what his path in life is going to be. And sometimes succeeding, sometimes tripping and going down wrong paths. It's a very raw film that's shot in a very kind of documentary type style, which works for this. Especially the performance of Riz Ahmed is what carries this entire film because he is so strong. All the accolades that he's gotten for this film, entirely earned. Yeah. The film as a whole, I was like, that's a good drama. It did not blow me away, but it was interesting. I enjoyed it. I more enjoyed his performance than I enjoyed the film itself. One thing that I was not able to get out of my head the entire time, and I just find this funny, is there is a movie in the early 2000s from a Canadian director called It's All Gone, Pete Tong, which is a mockumentary about a DJ in Ibiza who goes deaf and all of a sudden can't do the thing that he feels like he was put on this earth to do. And so he goes on a journey of self-discovery and basically comes back having learned how to DJ by feeling the actual physical sonic vibrations of music and learning how to mix that way. And also having cleaned his life up because he was on a destructive path of substance abuse. And it's pretty much the exact same story as Sound of Metal. It's like you could double bill these films, and the only thing that's different about them is one is a straight-up drama and the other one is a mockumentary. So I find that kind of funny.
I had forgotten about It's All Gone, Pete Tong, but that movie is so good. Yes. So good. It does not get... I think I vaguely remember it being quite acclaimed when it came out, but it's not the kind of thing people talk about very often now. But yeah, it's definitely one worth seeing. It's so brilliant.
Very forgotten film, which is kind of a shame because it's actually a favorite of mine and one that I kind of like, I'm not even sure there's a Blu-ray you can get out there of it at this point. I know I'm still holding on to my old DVD of that movie, but it's if you can get a hold of a copy, I think that makes a very nice kind of double bill evening. Watch Sound of Metal and then watch It's All Gone, Pete Tong.
Yeah, and I would watch them in that order too. I really, really liked Sound of Metal. I think you're right, though. The movie really is carried by Riz Ahmed's performance. The gentleman that was also nominated for Supporting Actor who plays the leader of the Halfway House.
Yeah,
he's also really, really, really good. I was really impressed by, again, sound design in that movie is like out of this world. Like, I don't know what it would be like clearly to be going deaf, but I feel like I have a better understanding for the technical process of like having that implant in your head and just how much you can hear out of that. And that final scene I thought was actually super touching and moving, and I thought it was really, really well done. I've told everybody to watch this movie. Like, you're gonna love it, just watch it. And I haven't had too many people say, oh, that wasn't so good. So that's great.
Yeah, definitely. They kind of fluctuate with the rules of when they're going to use audio to try to simulate the deaf experience for the audience and when they're just going to let people hear everything. And you don't really get lost on which is which, which is really good and I think really impressive too. And there's certain points where it's like, yeah, the sound is just going to cut out because all of a sudden we're moving inside his hearing.
Yeah.
And the same thing of when he finally gets what he believes is going to be his ticket out, his cochlear implants, and he discovers that he doesn't have the range of hearing that he used to. Every once in a while, we get to hear what it's like from his perspective, and it's tinny and it's digitized. And if there's too much noise going on, then it all just kind of bleeds together and nothing is really discernible.
Yeah.
And it's very impressive. If I'm not mistaken, I think they did win the Oscar.
Yeah, they did.
Sound design.
Yeah, they did.
I think of all the ones that were nominated, I think it was probably best deserved.
So yeah, highly recommended by me too. I really like that movie.
Yeah. So the next film on my list was The Kid Detective, written and directed by Evan Morgan and starring Adam Brody, who also produced the film.
Okay. I think I've seen this one too.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a story that's basically, what's the best way to describe it? I wouldn't call it a comedy, and I wouldn't even call it a black comedy. It kind of firmly fits in like a drama thriller sort of template. It's a mystery film. But the premise is that Adam Brody plays a guy who, as a kid, was basically like Encyclopedia Brown and like solved kid mysteries. He would solve like who took the licorice out of the school canteen. And he became infinitely known as basically this kid detective who would solve kid cases. And now he is this burned out adult who's basically like an alcoholic and is angry at his life and abusive towards others and just really bitter. And he's still kind of like solving kid cases. Can you find my missing cat? And one day in walks, because this is a mystery film, it's basically like, you know, we're doing the old Sam Spade stuff with this film and fits in that sort of template. Woman walks into his office and is like, I need you to solve who killed my boyfriend. Now he's got a real grown-up case. He's solving a murder and he sinks his teeth into it. But he's also like a little bit over his head because he's never solved real crimes before. And he's also still in this incredibly like burnt out state of self-destruction. And he continues to basically fight his demons and try to solve the case at the same time. This is the very premise of the movie, I think, would make for a wicked dark comedy. I think it could be really enjoyable. And they don't do that here. They don't do it at all. It's just straight up dramatic performances in a mystery format, and it's fine. It's okay. It was struggling to keep my attention, but midway through when the mystery starts to kick up like into full gear, then I was like, okay, I'm back on board. And ultimately, I think I did like the movie, but it definitely struggled to keep me engaged through the whole thing. It's hard to recommend this thing wildly unless, like, you know, it comes on some streaming service and you have the chance to watch it and it interests you. Other than that, unfortunately, I was not as blown away as I wanted to be by this film.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was very underwhelmed. Very underwhelmed. But I mean, yeah. I did watch it. And Brody is fine. I think the performances, like you say, the performances are okay. It's just the movie, it really feels like a missed opportunity, especially with that title and that premise. Like, how do you not lean into that?
There's another film that came out quite a few years ago from the Derek Comedy team. This is back when crap, I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. Donald Glover was part of them. They did a movie called Mystery Team. And it was the same sort of premise, where it was like these three kids who grew up as like kid detectives solving kid crimes. And now they're adults and they have like a real crime that drops into that. But the version that they go with is that they're adults that are still kind of trapped as like 10-year-olds. And so you have these adults walking around going, you know, they're having a meeting with like actual drug dealers, and the drug dealers with their guns out are like, you want something to drink? And like, milk, please. You know, and like that's where the humor sort of comes from in that movie. And that movie's a little hit or miss, but it's definitely enjoyable. And I think if you're looking for something that like takes that premise of like the child detective to a darkly comedic level, Mystery Team is the movie you're looking for, not Kid Detective, unfortunately. So the other movie that I watched was Those Who Wish Me Dead, which is on HBO Max and is... Taylor Sheridan's new movie. This is the guy who wrote Sicario and Hell or High Water. Very much of a type. And he's directing a lot of films now, too, which are very much, again, of that type.
Also the co-creator of Yellowstone, yes. Just because.
And this is based on a novel about a... What do you even call the profession? Basically, people just like... Angelina Jolie is basically trapped in like a fire watch tower in the middle of a park. She's a fire jumper, and she's like kind of burned out from horrible crap that has happened. And she's like trying to like emotionally recover, that sort of thing. And into her life walks a situation where there is a kid who is being chased by a couple of assassins because his father uncovered some shady accounting or something like that, and the assassins killed his father. And in the escape attempt, he runs right into the arms of Angelina Jolie. And all of a sudden, these assassins, played by Aidan Gillen, Littlefinger on Game of Thrones, and Nicholas Holt, are chasing after them. It's basically that type of thriller. And then you also have John Barenthal as the local sheriff, who kind of gets involved in the whole situation. And the movie is... not bad. I like the movie. I like the tone of the movie. It has some really neat set pieces. And ultimately, I quite enjoyed it a lot. And it's nice to see Angelina Jolie back in movies that aren't Maleficent. But it's also, the movie spends a lot of time with Aidan Gillen and Nicholas Holt as the assassins. And they're not near as interesting as the other characters in the film, unfortunately. Like every time it cuts back to them, I'm like, let's spend less time with these. Are just the guys that are coming after. I don't need to be in these guys' lives this much. So it does jump back and forth a bit too much. But all of the side characters, and there are a few in the film, particularly by John Bernthal, I thought were actually quite well fleshed out and given a lot more time than side characters of this type of film would normally be given, to the point where all of these side characters end up having their own arcs of themselves. It means that Angelina Jolie's character has maybe a little less of an arc. You could almost say that's a film with like multiple protagonists in that way, instead of like a single protagonist and side characters, which I thought was neat. I liked it, but I think it's a good, enjoyable thriller, especially if you're looking for something that like throws back to like a 90s thriller that you would typically see in the theaters at that time. I like those movies, and it was kind of nice to see something like that again, even if it doesn't entirely work. So, but I would say it's definitely worth a watch.
It's still on my watch list, so I'm happy to hear that it's a throwback, because I love those two. So
yeah, and it's enjoyable, and it's a beautiful movie. It looks absolutely gorgeous, so it's definitely good for that. So the last thing I want to talk about was not even specifically any particular movie itself, but something that I've been doing and absolutely loving. I recently acquired a Oculus Quest 2 VR headset, and I've been playing a lot with that. And one of the things I learned is that VR is actually very good for playing 3D movies. I've got a handful of 3D Blu-rays that are in my library that are coasters at this point, because it has been probably about 6 years since I've owned a 3D TV. I don't have anything that can play these things, and they don't make 3D TVs anymore. So it is a completely useless thing for me to even have these discs. I just kind of look at those guys. Wow, that was a thing they said was going to be a thing that is no longer a thing. Shocker. And like, you know, no wonder people are not so, you know, roll their eyes when a new format gets rolled out and pushed on them, because like 6 years from now, it's going to be gone. However, I found out that VR, because VR is essentially, it is stereoscopically creating the entire world for you in the headset already. Turns out, if you watch 3D movies in it, the results are fantastic. Way better than I ever got off of any 3D TV. And it basically rivals the best 3D I've seen in theaters. So it is very cool. So I've been going through this process where I found a successful process to basically rip my 3D Blu-rays and stream them onto my Oculus Quest and watch them inside a little movie theater inside the VR. And what's really neat is the app I've been using, which is called Big Screen. It basically puts you in a theater environment. Like, there's several environments you can choose, like a drive-in, or you're sitting in at home, or you're like sitting in like various different movie theaters. And it's like, you can legitimately, it simulates the feeling of sitting in a movie theater and watching a movie, because you're sitting in a movie theater looking at this big screen in front of you and watching the movie. And because it's all VR, it's wild, because you'll be in a darkened theater and you actually get that effect where the light of the movie, as it changes from shot to shot, will actually reflect off the walls and environment of the virtual theater you are in, and really makes you feel like you're sitting in a freaking movie theater. It's like, I absolutely love it. Such an incredible experience. And it made me realize how much I miss going to the theater. So I've been going, so the stuff that I've watched so far, I'm just going to list off some movies. I watched Dread, which was actually shot in 3D.
Yeah.
So that one was really nice. I watched Gravity. I don't know if that one was actually shot in 3D, but it was primarily meant to be seen in 3D.
I remember when they did, when that was released, there was a big deal about the lenses and cameras that they used and the shooting style that they used. I think a big chunk of that was shot in 3D.
And then I watched Pacific Rim, which looked great in 3D. It was so good. I watched Tron Legacy, a movie which I don't particularly care for, but I wanted to see how the 3D looked in it. And it was all right. I think the most interesting thing about that movie is maybe like it begins in like the normal world, and none of that stuff is really in 3D, even though it displays like 3D. There's like no stereoscopic imaging that's really going on. There's no depth that they created for that scene. It's only once he gets inside of the virtual world of Tron that the 3D comes out. And I think that was an interesting choice, and probably a good choice, even if you're, you know, I'm sure in the theater audiences were sitting there for the first 20 minutes going, I don't think the 3D is working.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I try not to watch things in 3D because they generally don't work for me. So if there's an option to not see it in 3D, I'll watch it in 2D.
Oh yeah, same. But it's I am very much enjoying this process, because I feel like I'm finally seeing the 3D that they wanted me to see.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm really curious about this. We've been talking about maybe investing in a Quest box, so I think maybe we should move that up a little bit.
So the only thing that really disappoints me, and the only other thing I was watching is I watched Doctor Strange as well. And I've got a few other discs I'm going to load in, but that's what I've been doing with it. But the thing that disappoints me now is that for the most part, 3D Blu-rays are not produced anymore, because it is a dead format for the most part. Apparently, it's been more successful in the UK than it has been in North America.
Oh, okay.
And so there is still like a bunch of 3D that happens on some releases in the UK. Like, we'll get the Blu-ray here and it will just be the normal 2D version, or we'll get like a 4K version and whatnot. But they're still, for some movies, getting 3D versions. But there aren't that many titles. There's basically like this 4-year span where big movies were getting released in 3D Blu-rays. And so that is the entirety of the library that I have to select from, for movies that I can watch in 3D. There's a very finite range of movies, and some I don't even want to see, that are going to exist in it. And there's not going to be any more. That's a disappointing thing. It's like, now I want more movies in 3D. It's like, now that I can actually see them in a format that works. But it's not going to happen. So it's just like this weird little artifact that I can enjoy.
What, no Piranha 3D for you? Or 3DD for you?
You know, the first one, Piranha 3D, I think is actually a fun movie, and I would probably watch that.
We've seen
that. I saw that in the theater.
Yeah, so did we. The second one is actually just a stupid fun. I think it's
really I have not seen the sequel. The John Gulager sequel.
You know, speaking of, like, dead technology, so we're recording this on Memorial Day weekend for the States. We're in Canada, which we don't celebrate it, but... Of course, everyone assumes that you're in the U.S. So the other day I got a mail out from the Nine Inch Nails shop that they were having a Memorial Day sale and that they had added stock that they had found in a back room. And I'm like, ooh, I wonder what they found in the back room.
Oh, wow.
They found laser discs of Closure, which was their first concert film that they released in 97, that they actually put up for sale. And I'm like, God damn it, I would have totally bought that. They were selling it for $10.
See, this is my weird collector mentality. I never had Laserdisc, and it was something I always wanted. Like, I got to see a handful of Laserdiscs, and I was always, like, blown away by, like, oh my god, the quality is so much better than VHS. And it had those features, like director commentary, and I was absolutely salivating, but it was so expensive that at the time, I could not afford to buy into it. It was just always out of reach. And at about the time where it was starting to become financially viable for me to buy into Laserdisc is exactly when DVD came out. And so I went in, I was early adopter on DVD. I was whole hog. They ported over all the features from the Laserdisc. I was getting all of those features I wanted, the director's commentary. Quality was better on DVDs than it was on Laserdisc. So, like, there was no reason to go to Laserdisc. There is no reason now to go to Laserdisc. But God damn it, there isn't part of me that wants to get a Laserdisc player and start collecting Laserdiscs. There's no rational reason in the universe for me to want to spend my money on this, but part of me really does.
I know. I saw that and I'm like, I don't even have an interest in this point about playing them. Just like from a purely nostalgic collector thing. I was like, fuck, I really wish I could have bought that Laserdisc.
They had weight to them. Yes. You picked up a Laserdisc. You're like, I am holding a thing. This has heft to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like records, right? There's just something tangible about, you know, having like that thing. And I mean, it's really one of the reasons why I still buy Blu-rays. Like I don't buy as much as I used to, but I still legitimately buy physical media because I like to have it. Like, I like to be able to
buy more and more. Yeah. And specifically like hard to find stuff that you're not going to find other places. I've been ordering selectively a bunch of stuff from Arrow.
Yeah, Media ditto. Yeah, me too.
Lately, which is always difficult because they're UK based, and so which means you have to be careful that you're not ordering something that's like region B.
Yeah.
But fortunately with 4K, because I can now do 4K discs with the PlayStation 5, the 4K discs are not region locked,
that's right.
I'm told. And so you can watch everything. So I ordered, they put up for pre-sale and it almost immediately got sold out. They put up a 4K two-disc set of True Romance.
Oh!
This is going to sound really weird, but it has both the director's cut, which is the only version that almost everyone has seen, and the theatrical cut, which was only ever released on VHS. The VHS came out with both like director's cut and theatrical cut, and depending which version you got, depending on which version you would see. But that was the only time it ever got released except for the theater. And I've always wanted to get my hands on a copy of it, not because it's good, but because it is uniquely interesting how they re-edited that film to get a R rating on the movie. And part of the mini cut they had to make, and this is definitely a sign of the times because this is a mid-90s film, they had to take away agency from Patricia Arquette's character in the film. So it is recut to the point where it's like, instead of her killing James Gandolfini with a shotgun, now it's cut so like he falls on the shotgun and it goes off and he kills himself. You know, and the end of the movie when she shoots Chris Penn for... You know, after Clarence gets shot, Instead, now they cut it so, like, one of the mob guys just sort of, like, comes back to life and shoots Crispin and then falls over dead again and she does nothing. And I find that so interesting that the way to get an R rating for that movie was to take away agency from the one woman in the film.
Yeah, right?
Interesting artifact I've kind of wanted to have in my collection for that.
No, reason. For sure, because I remember there was something probably not similar, but I remember there was a lot of discussion to when Bound came out. Mm-hmm. Because there was some creative editing that needed to be done in order to get that movie down to a rated R as well for basically the same reason, because two women. It's like, really, this is your reasoning? Like, fuck off.
Yeah. I know we're well out of, like, here's the stuff we've been watching, but a movie that everyone should track down and find, it's actually a copy on YouTube, so you can find it there. It's pretty easy to find. It's a documentary called This Film Is Not Yet Rated from Kirby Dick, which is an incredible film all about the MPAA and how basically the history of the organization, how they rate films. And the fun part of the film is basically the MPAA has always kind of tried to keep who their raiders are secret. It's a clandestine organization where you are not allowed information about how they do what they do and how they rate films. And so as a result, he hires a private detective and tries to uncover who all of the raiders are at the MPAA. But he also covers a lot of, like, here are the issues with how the MPAA rates films. And very specifically, when it comes to sexual content in films, if it is hetero content where it is about the guy receiving pleasure, then that stuff skates. If it's about the woman receiving pleasure, it gets rated harshly. If it is about queer content, no matter how tastefully it is done, it is going to get rated even harsher, and you're almost guaranteed an NC-17 at that point. Very much Bound fits into that because it is two women having a sexual relationship, something that would completely skate in other films if it was hetero, suddenly got tagged as aberrant and needing to protect children from. And this still happens.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's just the only difference is the MPAA has become a lot less influence because we're getting our films from so many sources. The MPAA does not affect Netflix, does not affect HBO Max, does not affect Paramount Plus. It does not cover the streaming services, only covers theatrical. And there's so many new sources where we're getting films from that the MPAA can't even touch. And so films are not being cut to please the MPAA anymore.
I will say this, I don't know if you're aware of this company. Have you heard of Unobstructed View?
No.
Okay, so if
This is the Criterion distributor in Canada, right?
Yeah, so they don't just distribute Criterion. They also distribute Arrow, Shout Factory, MVD, basically all of the sort of little small indie labels that are putting out like really great special collector's editions. If you're in Canada, I'd highly recommend checking out Unobstructed View because they often carry the same sales as the distributors do. So if Criterion is having a sale, often an Unobstructed View will also have the same sale and you get all your stuff in Canadian dollars. And they have their own sales and they have a really wicked discount bin where you can sometimes find some pretty sweet, nifty stuff if you're into some like crazy batshit movies. So nice. I highly, highly, highly recommended them. And the one thing that's weird is the last time I ordered from them was during the last Criterion sale, and I'd ordered three movies and they came in like three different packages like a month apart. So every time I got when I got the first one, I'm like, oh, I forgot I'd bought this. And then the second one came, I'm like, did I order anything else in that order? I don't remember. So it's like Christmas, random Christmas, which is great.
Yeah, the trap I always fall into is like once a year Criterion will have like a half price off sale. It's like half price off Criterion. Yes, count me in.
Right.
And so I always go to their site and I do like a big Criterion buy and it's like, it seems like, wow, look at all the great savings I got on these films. By the time the shipping and the custom charges to Canada kick in, it's just like, I really didn't save
that much. I know, right?
It's like this became a lot less than half off by the time this whole transaction finished. But I have all these cool Criterion movies I wanted, so
exactly.
And I do that year after year, so I'm gonna have to start buying them from within Canada.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it. It's a good outfit, and they put out some really great stuff. And I think I've bought all of my Arrow stuff from there.
Nice.
I think most of it. Finding Arrow Video was the worst thing that could have possibly happened to me. Because I buy a lot.
I mean, that's the only drawback is you either need to have a region-free player or you need to be very selective of what, you know, pay attention to what you're buying.
Yeah, because exactly.
You may not be able to play it back.
That's it. I mean, at this point, I'm pretty much only buying 4K, so I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling safe for now.
Well, as a last thing, I'll just say they just announced it's coming out in, I think, July, a 4K release of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So I pre-ordered that one.
I don't really feel the need to pre-order that.
Really?
I
love that movie.
I mean, I really like that movie, but I'm not... Like, I really only order movies that I have, that I know I'll rewatch, and mm-hmm. I haven't watched that since it came out, and I really don't need to, so probably not one. But dude, as soon as they, like, announce a Zardoz 4K, I'm the fuck up for that. I want all in Sean Connery and flying penises. Bring it on.
The most questionable one that I bought was I pre-ordered the 4K of Last Action Hero.
Which
it was actually like Sony ran a poll where they asked people, it's like, hey, what is it you most want to see released on 4K? And apparently the overwhelming answer was Last Action Hero. Who knew? So they released this big 4K special edition of Last Action Hero, and it's got commentary from John McTiernan on there and a whole bunch of special features. And it's like a full featured disc. And it's really interesting, too, because I listened to the commentary, and it's like, depending on your opinion of the film, you might be really bummed by it. But he spends a lot of time down on the entire film. He feels like he completely missed the tone of it, like he didn't quite nail it. And he's seen like, I would have done that differently. Oh, yeah. And it's like very much one of those situations where it's like, okay, here's the script. We need to put this thing in theaters in 8 months. Go. And the studio also had the mandate of trying to make the biggest movie of all time. That's what they wanted. And he fully admits it's like the problem was the machine was just too big for me to like get control of it. And it kind of got out of hand. And he doesn't feel like he ended up with the movie that he wanted to make or the best version of that movie. And I kind of agree with him. Like Last Action Hero is a movie that has a lot of flaws. But it also has a lot of stuff that's really fun.
I think the last one that I ordered was Southland Tales. Or maybe it was... I think it was Southland Tales in 4K,
mm-hmm.
which I really, really like that movie. So I was happy.
That's a movie I've never been able to dig on.
Oh,
every time I watch it, I'm just like, I know there's a movie here, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, it's a bit messy for sure. But those tend to be the movies that I like the best. I don't need to understand it. I just need to be sort of showered in it. And that's certainly what it feels like when I watch
it. It definitely has a sizable kind of cult following, that film. The people who love it intensely love that film. And I think I think they almost love that other people don't connect with it at
all.
That's
in part. I think that's totally in part.
It's like, it's a small club and it's our club.
In part, maybe. Well, I don't know. But yeah, like if you were to look at my collection of arrow videos, it's basically like all weird batshit stuff.
Well, that's what they largely, you know, what they specialize in. They weird stuff. They do a lot of international stuff. I got their Dead or Alive collection, which I love those films ever since I first saw them at the Vancouver Film Festival. You know, so there's a lot of cool stuff on their site.
Okay, that's enough shelling for
all us. We are not paid by Arrow Video, but we can be bribed with 4K Blu-rays. So
for sure,
that offer is on the table anytime you want, Arrow.
Pretty much. And with that, Ashley, where can folks find you?
You can find me on the internet, going viral depending on the day, at Ashley Lynch.
And you can find me on Twitter at The Marina. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with more movies and more TV and more shenanigans. Until then, find us online. Check out everything we talked about at atcpod.ca. And ciao for now.
Opening and closing credits are Happy Alley by composer Kevin MacLeod. For more information, visit incompetech.com.